Welcome back to the Be Better podcast. We are once again here in beautiful Chula Vista, California at the Elite Athlete Training Center, formerly the Olympic Training Center. And with us today is Melissa Stockwell. Melissa is a Army veteran, and she was a first lieutenant. And if I, as I go, you tell me if I'm saying anything wrong here. First lieutenant in the Army. She's an Iraq War veteran. She was the first female to be issued the bronze medal, or bronze star.
Bronze star, yeah.
And Purple Heart.
Yep.
Okay. She is on the board of directors for the Wounded Warrior Project. She has...
That is no longer. I was, but no longer.
Wikipedia lied to me.
That Wikipedia page.
Oh, I tell you. Either that or I just should be better in my research, right? A little bit. So this kind of goes both ways. Melissa also competed as a swimmer in the Paralympics in Beijing.
Yep.
She did. You did three events. You did the 100 meter butterfly, 100 meter freestyle, and 400 meter freestyle.
Yep.
After that, moved on to triathlon, starting at Worlds in Budapest in 2010.
Yep.
I was there with you. We did not know each other at that time.
Huh.
We could reminisce. I was not. It was my first year as a Team USA coach.
Oh, interesting. Small
very
world.
Very rainy that year.
It was very rainy.
Very rainy. Very wet. I think I remember seeing you come over the chain bridge. To be honest with you,
yeah, because
we're at
moment.
The finish. It was a beautiful time there. But then you went on to compete as an Olympic athlete. In Rio, where you were in the first medal for paratriathlon.
Yep.
Bronze medalist. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
One question that I always like to ask people off the front, and I've asked this for other medalists, is what do you do with it?
I get asked that a lot. Like, I sit in a safe at home. So I travel quite a bit. So I speak, and I typically bring it when I travel. So it is in its cool little wooden case in the bag that I travel with. It just kind of stays there.
At home, does it sit like in its own personal spot?
It's in a bag. It's not even like displayed.
Okay.
Just kind of, I know it's there. I just know.
Do the kids play with it?
No. Well, I take that back. I wanted Dallas, my son, he's three, to play with it. And he ended up throwing it and it hit my prosthetic leg, which is metal, and it dented the bronze medal. So thankfully it wasn't like some random stranger, and now it kind of adds character, but it's got a small dent on it. So I will know until the kids get older if I'm playing with that anymore.
So will that be a story that you're going to say at Dallas's wedding or is his graduation, where you just want to, as a mom, you want to give this like, you know, embarrassing story. It's like, you know, mom worked so hard to win an Olympic medal and you just banged it up.
Yeah. You know, now that it's there though, it's like a very, I mean, it's definitely a dent, but I don't know. I kind of like it. It's like, it kind of adds character too, and I don't know, and it's my son of all things, like coming back after having him and making it to Rio kind of like makes it all even better. I don't know,
like a happy scar.
Yeah exactly,
like a happy scar.
Exactly.
Well, that's super cool. I talked to Barb Lindquist a while back, and she's got a number of medals from swimming in her days, and I asked her what she did with them, and she's like, they just kind of sit in a drawer. And I'm like, well, have you ever thought about making a mobile out of them, and you know, like having the Olympic theme and having it play above your children in their cribs? She laughed like that too. Apparently that was not necessarily a thing.
My dad says I should get like a mold of it to like bring around everywhere, because he doesn't want me to like get like lose or have someone drop or
a fake one.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, the metal is like heavy and it's got beads in it that shake. I'm like, Dad, I don't think that's
There's beads in it?
Yeah, so it's actually pretty cool. So in the Paralympic medals, gold, silver, and bronze, there's a different number of beads in it. So Paralympic Games, obviously you have amputations, spinal cord injuries, visual impairment. So if I am if I cannot see what color it is, I can shake it, and the noise determines what color it is. It's pretty
amazing.
That's
so cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I'm a little bit biased, but I think the Paralympic medal is even cooler.
Well, of course, it's like a musical instrument.
It's awesome. And some braille on it as well.
Oh, that's, yeah. I guess that makes complete sense right now. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, and getting back to making a copy of it, I mean, part of the thing of bringing it around is so people actually can touch it, see it, you know, have like an interaction. It'd be like having a fake Stanley Cup.
It would be. It just wouldn't be the same. And I'm not so protective over it. Like if it, I don't know. I don't want anyone to drop it, obviously, but I hang on to it. I mean, it's fine. What good is it if it just sits in my office and I stare at it? It's like cool for people to see.
That's true. Yeah. Do you have to insure it? Is that something?
Nope. I honestly don't think there's that much like bronze in it.
Really?
I think it's like just a coating.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't really know for sure, but I think so.
You haven't cut it open to see?
No.
Taken it to a metallologist?
Nope.
Is that even a word? Nope. Metallologist is not a word
I've
made.
Pretend.
I just made that up. Getting back to some serious things, you are a co-founder of Dare to Try.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Dare to Try, how you came to be involved with that, kind of your vision, and where you see that going.
Sure. So I'm based out of Chicago. So Dare to Try, it's a paratriathlon club. So myself and two others co-founded the nonprofit back in 2011. So I'm missing a leg. The two co-founders, Carrie and Dan, are able-bodied, but they've both been involved in adaptive athletics their whole life. We were all triathletes, kind of realized the need, really the importance that sports plays in anybody's life, but especially somebody with a disability, kind of how much self-confidence and self-worth they can gain from it. So as avid triathletes, we thought, well, let's give this a shot. Let's start this para-triathlon club. Our first year in 2011, we all went and got our coaching certification to give it kind of more credibility. We thought our goal was to have like 7 athletes do a triathlon. By the end of the year, we had like 20 athletes. Currently, we like 7 years later, we have over 300 athletes on our rosters, youth, adults, injured service members. We have year-round programming. We have 3-day camps. We have clinics. We have an elite team. We have grassroots. I mean, it is incredible. And it's, you know, our motto is one inspires many, and our athletes, I mean, they inspire me, but they really inspire the entire community, like on and off the race course. It's pretty amazing.
That's like a full-time job then for...
Well, so initially it was, but so now we have grown where we actually have 5 employees. So my role is more as a co-founder, and I show up at all like the major events, and I like coach, like at our 3-day camp, I'll coach the running clinic, or I coach monthly ambulatory run clinic. So I kind of do some coaching. I'm at all of our major events, but I personally am not an employee of the organization. So starting out, Carrie Sirota, who is our co-founder and now our executive director, she kind of took it on as her own and did it, you know, without any sort of payment or anything for a year or two. But we've grown enough where we have 5 employees now, so it's pretty great.
That's awesome. And I'm assuming that when you started, your vision was not to have it be anything where it was this big. Did you envision that it would be this big?
I mean, we hoped it would be, but I don't think we ever thought it would be this big. I mean, going from the idea of 7 athletes across the finish line that first year and then having over 20, and then 7 years later, over 300 on our roster. So it's grown bigger, faster than we ever thought it could grow. And I think there's still a lot more potential.
Where do you see the next big steps coming from Dare to Try?
You know, obviously sustainability is hard with any nonprofit. So trying to make sure we can sustain ourselves for years to come. You know, we're looking at the donors' dollars just like any other nonprofit is. So I think long term, we would love to have our own facility in Chicago, our own Dare to Try gym for our athletes to go to and the general public to go to. And then I think probably branching out to other cities as well. So we wanted to make sure that we were solid in Chicago before we kind of branched out and gave our name to somebody else to run in the city. But I think we're kind of getting closer and closer to that.
Where would you see the next, I would say, branch being? Do you have something in mind? Do you have, like, when you say this is really where I would like to go, has anybody approached you?
Yeah, so we actually get approached quite a bit by someone who wants to start a chapter in their own city. The issue is, like, we're very proud of Dare to Try. We're proud of the name. We're proud of what it's become. And we want to make sure we have the right person to run it in another city so they run it right, so it doesn't kind of taint the Dare to Try name. So,
yep.
You know, we're kind of... it's hard to kind of give that up and give that away. So I think probably big cities that have, I think we've had a lot of interest up in New York, down in Texas. I think kind of like when we started in Chicago, we partnered with another adaptive sports organization. We partnered with the Chicago Park District, and that really kind of helped us get off of our feet to actually start it. So kind of going in some place that kind of has something that's there already and kind of tag teaming with it in that city.
Okay. It sounds daunting yet very exciting.
It is. I mean, it's exciting, and I think our name is becoming more and more well known, like throughout the triathlon community, not just in Chicago, but kind of nationwide. And the more that we get our name out there and people know about us, I think the further we can go.
I've heard the name for, I would say, probably the last 4 or 5 years, just with my involvement with USAT. And we've had some funding where we funded a couple of your camps.
Yeah,
and
I think
that was a great way to allocate, you know, funds to help athletes. And so that's how I came to it. So I think it's exciting and interesting, and you're kind of on the cusp of something that is like it feels like it's kind of the next wave.
Yeah, I think so. It's when I think about like the accomplishments in my life, that's very much one of my proudest professional accomplishments, just being able to really give back. I mean, I wouldn't be here, the things I've done, if it weren't for these organizations that helped me give back. So to help others kind of see what they're capable of, it's pretty empowering.
It feels like you guys are almost the benchmark of what groups need to be in order to be successful.
Oh, that's awesome. That's very kind. All right, so Carrie and Dan, the co-founders, but then also the employees, I mean, are so passionate about what they do. I mean, Carrie is, she is on a mission, and she will achieve that mission to get as many athletes as she can find to show them what they can do with their physical disability. So I agree with you. It's good.
Do you guys partner with other organizations like Challenge Athletes Foundation?
We haven't really, which we should, because we're all out there for the same mission. Challenge Athletes Foundation, Dare to Try, Achilles, any of these groups, the mission is to get individuals with physical disabilities active. So somewhat like we focus on triathlon, CAF, I mean, obviously triathlon, Achilles, a number of different events, but we're all have the same mission. So, I hope we can partner down the road. It kind of only makes sense that we do.
Yeah. And have you done work with Team RWB?
We have had some Team RWB members come to some of our camps. Team RWB is amazing. Talk about their logo. Talk about a cool logo.
I know. Isn't it awesome?
Oh, my gosh. I want to, like, emblazon myself with their logo everywhere.
Just tattoo it right
right
across your neck.
It's amazing. It's pretty amazing. I don't know if partner is the right word, but we've definitely been in touch with people from Team RWB.
Would it be something where you guys would conjoin at some point in time? Would that be?
I mean, we're definitely two different entities. I mean, Team RWB has their mission. All these different nonprofits have their own missions, but they are similar. So I don't think they would ever be fully combined into one, but there's so many ways to work together.
But there's a lot of collaboration that can be done.
There is, and there could be. I mean, we can send our athletes to their camps if we have camps and they reach out to their athletes. So it's kind of just sharing the love.
It's not competitive. It shouldn't be.
The problem is, I think it is, that it is more than we want it to be. We want, like, the world, like, we should all just get along, and we all want that, like, we all have the same mission, like, let's just collaborate and make it happen. But I think there is, I mean, reach nonprofits, we each need donor money, so we're technically competing, you know, for the same money, but I mean, we wish it wasn't the case. We just want everyone to love each other.
Yeah.
And all work for the same mission, because that's what we have.
It's one big Coke commercial.
Yeah, right. And P&G and Toyota, all these amazing commercials this year.
Oh, yeah. How did you guys come up with the name?
Yeah, we, in our USAT certification, in our level one coaching course, we sat there and, came up with lists of names, and some of them were so funny. I wish I could remember what they were. And I don't know. I think we like randomly saw someone reading some book, and one of us was looking over their shoulder, and we saw some words. It wasn't the letter two, and it was T-R-Y, but it said like Dare to Try. We were like, That's amazing. So DARE and then the number two and then TRI is what we are. So, I think it's a great name.
I like it. Yeah. I mean, it's got a little prince to it, you know, kind of incorporating, yeah. you know, some shortcuts yeah. there, which I, you know, yeah. I appreciate being yeah. a Minnesotan.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that played nothing in your.
No, it didn't. It didn't. But, you know, that's all right.
That's all right. We'll, yeah. we'll think about that. I've heard a lot about your logo as well. You know, you're talking about the Team RWB logo. When I was at the training center in Colorado Springs, a number of people that were there commented on how cool your logo was.
Oh,
like they
really?
Like it was like a sought after piece of swag. Like, oh, I love that.
That's
Dare to
awesome.
Try a bag because that like the logo's awesome.
The book was pretty cool.
Yeah, but did you guys run into some copyright infringements issues? Did I hear?
So we had so Adidas, who has three slashes. So Dare to Try is Dare to Try, but it has the three has. Red and blue slashes that are three that go through the name. And we are a small nonprofit.
Yeah.
We did not think that it will never be competitive with the Adidas company ever. But yes, they came after us and we have in turn had to change part of our logo. I don't even know. We can't have one of the letter has to be separate from the slashes. There's something specific that our logo now has to be. So it's slightly different. The general public might not even notice, but it is slightly different than it has been in the past.
Wow. Yes. Did you get a little pucker factor when you saw that
or
heard about that?
It's flattering that Adidas thinks that we will ever be competitive with them. but it's just, we are a small nonprofit and they are Adidas. So it's not going to happen. A little bit frustrating, I think, just because, you know, we were very proud of it. And we still are. And we probably spent a lot of time and energy on it that we didn't need to. But it's done. Hopefully it's in the past. And
they never approached, like, saying this might be a great branding opportunity to support and be a part of, you know, part of the group and integrate. Nothing like that. That would have been the better way to do it, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been nice.
Right.
So you are a new mom again.
Yes.
So Dallas Patrick is your first child.
Yeah, Dallas Patrick is three. And then Millie Lynn is 6 months.
Aww.
And I am dying to get home to them tomorrow.
I bet. How long have you been gone away?
8 days, which is a long time for me to be
That's
away.
That's a long time for a mom.
Like this is, I am, unless, if I go to Tokyo, I will be away for this long again. But if I don't, I'm not being away for this long again. It's long.
How do you get through the long trips? Because I know that when Wes and Ken and I were talking as fathers, you know, we have a specific way to try and, you know, communicate back mm-hmm. with our family and wives and kids and such.
Sure.
But as a mom, it's dynamically different.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably pretty. I mean, so first off, my husband Brian is amazing. He is like my dreams are his dreams. I mean, I feel so fortunate to have the support that I have. And I mean, he's at home. I kept asking, do you want me to get a babysitter for a night so you can like have a break? He's like, nope, I got it. I mean, he is a rock star right now. I owe him big time. But I mean, I do what I can. I mean, I FaceTime my son. Dallas he doesn't always love FaceTime. You know, so it's hit or miss. Like sometimes he wants to talk to me. Other times he gets sad because I'm not there. Other times he wants nothing to do with the phone and he turns it off. Like, so it's really hit or miss. And then obviously 6-month-old Millie, I mean, she sits there and smiles at me on the phone. That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
But it's really just trying to connect with them as much as I can. And we have a calendar at home and they're counting down the days like at home. And, but it's hard. I mean, I don't know. It's hard for any parent. And I don't know, maybe just because she's only 6 months old or just this is the longest I'm away, but yeah, I'm like dying to get home.
Oh, I can imagine. And, yeah. and it does seem like nowadays we have the capability with technology to be able to talk.
Yeah.
But I couldn't imagine doing it like 10 years ago.
No way. And you know what I can't imagine is, and kind of just turning into like military talk for a little bit. So I was deployed and I lost my leg. I was only gone for 5 weeks. I had no kids. But being gone 8 days now with two kids, you think about soldiers who are deployed for 12, 15 months at a time, and they do this, and they can't even do FaceTime. They can't even talk to their kids.
Not anymore?
It depends where they are. I mean, if they're in like a remote area of Iraq or Afghanistan, I mean, no way.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's heartbreaking to think about that. I mean, it's a totally different time. I mean, I was deployed. I had no kids. I didn't have to worry about anybody back home. I mean, I honestly cannot imagine going over like with a family now.
It'd be difficult. I you know, you hear about military support for the families, and you know, when they're gone, and especially like I guess it's more now with that can be on both sides, but it used to be like military wives and mm-hmm. how they were kind of like their own little sorority where they were their own
you
support, and they
yeah.
they basically helped each other out. I couldn't imagine being gone for that long, mm-hmm. I didn't serve in the military. I was a police officer for 12 years, as you know, probably as close as I was going to come to something like that. But it has to. I mean, as an older person, I think of the people that are the older officers, you know, and their deployment. They do have these extended long families mm-hmm. behind them, and that how you do that has to be. It just has to be a different mindset.
I mean, someone could be deployed when their wife is 7 months pregnant and they come home to a year and a half year old. When it is their child.
And you just don't even know.
I mean, it's mind baffling that happens so much. And it's just, I have so much more respect for leaving family. I mean, it's hard.
It is. You have a great story, and I think that's no secret, and you have been kind of on the circuit sharing that in a number of different ways. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how that kind of that voice came about. Was it always there? Did it kind of find life after your injury? And where do you kind of see that going?
Kind of as far as speaking or kind
yeah,
of,
yeah. Speaking, writing. We talked
sure.
a little bit yesterday
about
children's books.
Yeah. So I lost my leg in 2004, and I'd never, I was a communications major in college, so I was comfortable in front of an audience or speaking or whatnot. So after I lost my leg, I spoke at my dad's company, I think a year following, and I can't say that really started anything, but it kind of made me realize that, okay, like I enjoy speaking. People seem inspired by my story, and who doesn't want to try to inspire somebody? So as I led up to Beijing in 2008, I kind of started getting more requests to go and speak, and after Beijing, I started working with an agent in probably 2012, and my speaking has picked up. It's definitely how I make my living. It's my job for sure. So, just going around, I tell my story. The goal is that the audience walk out of the room and they are inspired to do something they haven't already done. They realize that we all have challenges in life, we all have obstacles in life, but we can all persevere through them, and a lot of times you end up better on the other side. So kind of the you can do anything you put your mind to attitude. I've been fortunate to speak for a number of, you know, large corporations. I speak for schools and, you know, kind of the whole gamut of, you know, three people in the audience up to, you know, 1,000 people. So I enjoy it, though. It's fun. And I would like to continue it as long as I can. I would love to write a book. We talked about a children's book. It's just a matter of trying to figure out how to do it. But
yeah,
it's on the bucket list.
If somebody were to be interested in having you speak at, like, their company, at their mm-hmm. their facility, wherever that may be, how would somebody go about kind of
doing
hunting
that?
You down?
Sure. So my website, just melissastockwell.com, easy enough. And on there, there's a contact tab. And you do that, it actually goes directly. No, it actually comes to me. It comes to me first, and then I typically, my agent is typically the one who would reply to it, though, to kind of get everything started.
Okay. And it's, so that would be something where you're kind of just open to the groups and such. So that would be... That'd be good. So if anybody's out there looking for a good speaker, especially for, I would think, like you said that you were just up in Eugene, because you just flew out, because we're at camp mm-hmm. here during the week, and you flew out up to Eugene.
Yep, Eugene, Oregon. Yeah,
and spoke at the college there.
Yep, at the university. Yeah,
and flew right back. Like,
I did.
World traveler.
It is, and it's so I probably travel. I would say I speak about 50 times a year, so it's a good amount. Some weeks. None. Other weeks is multiple, but with kids, I am like all about getting in and out as quick as I can. So day trips, if I have to get home at midnight, I would rather be there so I'm there the next morning when the kids wake up. Like, I am all about it. So I travel quite a bit, but they are quick trips, like as quick as they can be.
When somebody brings you in, do you have like Do you have like a required list of things that need to be waiting for you? Like, are you an, I need a bowl of
only green M&Ms.
I was just going to say green M&Ms.
Chapstick, only the blue kind. No,
you're not high maintenance like that. Not like that. I think you should be at some point in time. Just because you can be.
Just
like,
because I can be.
Like, kind of channel your like your inner, you know, sure. Britney Spears and just say, this is what needs to happen for
I
me.
I did get asked once, do I want still or sparkling water in like the green room before? And I was like, whoa, this is, I could ask for whatever I want, but. Still water, always still.
Okay, we'll get there. How about when you travel, like when you fly? What are some of the staples that go with you on the plane when you fly? Are you a sleeper? Are you a
computer? I get work done. Oh man, I want internet on that flight, and I want it to work. And that's my time to get stuff done. Unless I'm really into a book, but I would rather spend like tomorrow. I'm flying back to Chicago from San Diego. It's a 3.5 hour flight. If the internet works on that flight and if I can get on, I mean, I can get a ton of work done. So I'd much rather do it on the plane than at home. Because when I get home, I am like, I don't want to spend a second away from my family this weekend.
You're just basically tuned in when you get home. All there.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's an important thing for sure.
It's hard to do though. And day to day when I'm not traveling, it's hard. I mean, there's always emails to do. There's always something to respond to. But trying to put that aside and just to have all your energy and focusing on the kids when you have that, because that's not forever.
Yeah. Thinking back over the last couple of years in your travels and kind of your celebrity, quote unquote, because you are, I would say, you know, let's agree to disagree.
Go ahead.
Right. Who would you say would be like the top three coolest people you've met over the last, like say 5 years?
5 years.
Because we'll kind of give it back a little bit, because it could be, you know, this could push it back a little.
Yeah, farther. So I've been fortunate to meet a lot of presidents.
Oh.
It's been within 5 years. I was able to stand in a room with, at the time, was all five living presidents and their spouses. So that was a pretty historic moment. So I don't like to talk politics. We mentioned this before.
We'll just talk about
people.
Yeah.
But George W. Bush is one of my, I think he's an incredible man just because he went through a lot of things in his presidency. He was my commander in chief when I was over in Iraq. A lot of soldiers lost lives. A lot of us lost limbs, but he never forgets that. Even after his presidency, he's chosen to have a legacy where he recognizes the choices that he's made and the impacts that they have, and he owns up to them. And, you know, he invites wounded soldiers out to his ranch in Texas for a mountain bike ride every year. I mean, he's very in tune to what we are doing and the sacrifices that we've made. So for that, I am forever grateful to him. So
yeah.
I've been lucky to have a number of encounters with him. So he's one of my probably favorite people that I've met.
Are you like on a first name? Do you call him W? Do you call him A's George?
I would call him Mr. President, but he would call my husband Brian. Big Bri.
Really?
He held my son Dallas when he was 5 days old.
Did he call him Big D?
No.
He
only reached him. It was funny. We went to this book signing. It just happened to be like 20 minutes away, 5 days after Dallas was born. And we went, and he's like, and you know, he calls me Melissa. Like, and we were holding Dallas, and he's like, what's his name? And when we said Dallas, not named after the city, but it's my husband's great grandfather. But then he reached across the table to take him because he's from Dallas. That's where his library is. He's from Texas. So we had this amazing picture of President Bush holding Dallas, and it'll be a great show and tell for Dallas someday.
That will be. That's a brush with fame, like at a very early age.
Right. So definitely him. I'm sure there's been. I was a big gymnast when I was younger. Like, you know, dreamed of the Olympics and Olympic gymnastics. So anyone that I would meet, like. Any gymnast. So local, like most recently you have Ellie Raisman. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Shannon Miller, Kim Zemeskal, Carrie Strug from back in the day. And I think I've been able to kind of come across them. So that's kind of a big starstruck moment.
Have you ever met Mary Lou Retton?
I have.
Wow. See, she would be on my top five to meet celebrities. I like, because she
was tiny. I mean, you know that they are, but then when you see them and you're like, you are tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a crush on her when I was a kid.
You did?
Yeah. I don't know what, well, because she was 84. Was she 84?
No, she was 80. I'm pretty sure.
Was she 19?
Wait, I was born in 80.
So she was a Summer Olympics and they separated.
80 was summer.
Yeah. Maybe no, we boycotted 80, didn't we? Boycott the 80 Summer Olympics because they were in Moscow.
Then.
84 was in Los Angeles.
And I was born, maybe it was like 88, because she was still very present when I was growing up. But regardless, big fan.
Yeah, huge fan. Because she was like the first gymnast that I kind of remember. Although I did get a chance to work with I did an event down in Atlanta with Kathy Johnston.
Okay.
So she was an Olympic silver medalist from 76.
Do you know Olga Corbett?
I know the name.
She was my coach when I was a when I was younger. She was my gymnastics coach.
Wow.
That was a big deal then.
Was she mean or was she?
Because
I've heard
she had a tough love, which I actually thrive off of tough love. So it worked.
Kind of like me on the pool deck this morning, just being super tough with you.
Yeah. Great workout, by the way. I got a lot out of it. It was great. exactly. Tough love all the way.
that's super awesome. So you are training for Tokyo 2020, right?
I hope. So after having a baby 6 months ago, it's a slow process. It's not like I'm getting my times back tomorrow, but I learned after having my son that I have to have patience, and I'm having patience. I'm seeing progress, and I just have to, I can't compare myself with anybody else other than be happy with my own progress. So
yeah.
The goal is Tokyo 2020, but I have a long way to go to get there.
All right. And so what does the rest of the year look like for you? What do you have on your calendar for competitions? Where would you see you next racing?
So the triathlon, it's a whole point system. So you do races, you get points, the points add up to a world ranking. So last year I was pregnant, so I have like basically 0 points. So you can only get into certain races if you have points. It's kind of this whole complicated system. So I'm for sure racing in Sarasota, Florida next month. Other than that, there's all these international races that I will probably apply to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on who else applies will kind of depend if I get in or not, because I have such a low amount of points. So I don't know. You know, hopefully I'll be competing in Yokohama, maybe in Great Britain, maybe in Edmonton. World championships are in Australia. I would love to go. You get a ton of points, but I have to see how the year goes. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite location where you would like, this is where I love to race. This is my favorite location.
Sarasota, I don't like, cause it's so dang hot and humid, but this is my third time racing. So like, I know the course really well. So that helps. It helps to know the course.
Yeah.
The most beautiful place I've raced was New Zealand. We raced in Auckland, and it was just picture. I mean, it's beautiful. So I would say that's probably my favorite place. And we toured around but any place, I mean, I really feel like I've seen the world. I've traveled around, I've raced around the world, and it's kind of a cool way to see the world.
What do you see that your husband and your kids will travel with you at some point in time? I mean, they're getting to be probably a little bit older and can understand and can experience
They're still young enough where it's a lot. And it's a lot to ask my husband to manage them both while I'm out racing on the race course. We tried that once in Sarasota, actually, and it was a disaster because Dallas, it was hot and it was a disaster. So we swore never again. But I'm sure as they get older, they will come to the event. So Brian traveled with me to Spain in 2016 to race. Obviously, he was in Rio. They'll be in Sarasota in a month. Debating whether or not to try it again to bring Dallas. I love for him to see me race, but we'll kind of see what his mood is.
It could be a little bit of a distraction too, especially when you're going down there for your job.
It is, but it's good. It's motivating to see him on the side of the course. Yep. Millie, she's too young. I mean, she won't be out there, but it's, I don't know. And he kind of gets it now. Like, he'll see my prosthetic legs. So like, that's your biking leg, mommy. Like, that's your running leg. Like, I don't know. It's kind of cool. I want him to see me race.
Yeah.
But he can't be throwing tantrums all over the place.
No, God.
I mean,
gosh,
he's three, which so that happens.
Yeah. Well, just tell him to be better now. Okay. Just just you have to be better for mommy out here.
Right.
All right.
That worked.
Well, maybe. Melissa, I can't thank you enough for the time. And I tell you, it's been so fun getting to meet you and getting to know you this week and actually kind of getting, another face to the Dare to Try program. And I certainly look forward to seeing you more in the future and getting to work with you and getting to just be able to see your kids and meet your husband and your kids at some point.
Yeah, you guys will have the hockey in common, that's for sure.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yep.
Except for he's probably a Blackhawks fan.
He's a Red Wings fan.
Oh, that's right. You did tell me that. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because my wife's from Chicago. We mentioned that before. And so, but she allows me to still be a Wild fan.
We went to a Blackhawks Red Wings game in Chicago, and it was so embarrassing because everyone would cheer for the Blackhawks, and then he'd be the only one sitting down. I'm like, Brian, at least like stand up, like pretend. And then the Red Wings would score, and he'd be the only one, and everyone's looking. And
they boo him. And it's a tough town.
Yeah. It's tough.
Maybe someday we can take a Bears game in together.
Okay. That's good.
Something to work for.
Sure.
We'll get the families together.
Okay.
Bring the wife, bring Brian. Yeah. We'll go as a foursome.
Sure.
We'll just try and wedge some really sweet seats off of somebody that has some connections. So if anybody has any connections here
please. Here we go. Yeah, now's your time.
Yeah, now's your opportunity.
Nice purple
to go
socks, by the way.
Oh, well, thanks. That's my ode to Prince.
Oh, yeah,
you know, I'm from Minnesota. Yep. You know, it kind of goes with it.
We did drive by his house in high school.
Oh, it's if you ever get a chance to get to Minneapolis, take the tour in Chanhassen of Paisley Park. It will give you chills.
I live in Eden Prairie, like right next to Chanhassen.
Yeah, it's some reason it always smells like cookies next to his house. I don't know why. But it smells like cookies down there because there's a kids triathlon that goes across the street. So, but that's a conversation for another day.
Sure.
So,
well, thank you.
Thank you,
Melissa.
We really appreciate it, and look forward to again talking to you again. And thank you for spending another segment with us. And we look forward to talking to you later. Thank you.
Thank you. Many times.